Chapter 33. The mines in Calicullo were stifling, and the slave girl could only imagine how much worse they would become when the summer sun was overhead. She had been in the mines for 6 months, longer than anyone else had ever survived, she'd been told. Her mother, her grandmother, and her little brother hadn't lasted a month. Her father hadn't even made it to the mines before Otterland's butchers had cut him down, along with the other known rebels in their village. Everyone else had been rounded up and sent here. She'd been alone for 5.5 months now. Alone, yet surrounded by thousands. She couldn't remember the last time she'd seen the sky, or the grasslands of Eelway undulating in a cool breeze. She would see them both again, though. The sky and the grasslands. She knew she would, because she stayed awake on nights she was supposed to have been sleeping, listening through the cracks in the floorboards as her father and his fellow rebels talked of ways to bring down Otterlin and of Princess Nehemia, who was in the capital at that very moment working for their freedom. If she could just hold on, if she could just keep drawing breath, she might make it until Nehemia accomplished her goal. She would make it, and then bury her dead, and when the mourning months were over, she would find the nearest rebel group and join them. With every Otterlanian life she took, she would say the names of her dead again, so they would hear her in the afterlife and know they were not forgotten. She swung her pickaxe into the unforgiving wall of stone, her breath ragged in her parched throat. The overseer lounged against a nearby wall, sloshing water in his canteen, waiting for the moment when one of them would collapse, just so he could unfurl that whip of his. She kept her head down, kept working, kept breathing. She would make it. She didn't know how much time passed, but she felt the ripple go through the mines like a shudder in the earth. A ripple of stillness, followed by wails. She felt it coming, swelling up toward her, closer and closer with each turned head and murmured words. And then she heard it, the words that changed everything. Princess Nehemia is dead. Assassinated by Otterlin. The words were past her before she had time to swallow them. There was a scrape of leather against rock. The overseer would tolerate the pause for only a few seconds longer before he started swinging. Nehemia is dead. She stared down at the pickaxe in her hands. She turned, slowly, to look into the face of her overseer, the face of Otterlin. He cocked his wrist, pronged whip ready. She felt her tears before she realized they were falling, sliding through 6 months' worth of filth. Enough. The words screamed through her, so loudly she began to shake. Silently, she began to recite the names of her dead, and as the overseer raised his whip, she added her name to the end of that list, and swung her axe into his gut. Chapter 34. Any changes in her behavior? She got out of bed. And? Standing in the sunlit hall of the upper levels of the glass castle, Ress's usually jovial face was grim. And now she's sitting in a chair in front of the fire. It's the same as yesterday. She got out of bed, sat in the chair all day, then got back into bed at sundown. Is she still not speaking? Ress shook his head, keeping his voice low as a courtier passed by. Philippa says she just sits there and stares at the fire. Won't speak. Still barely touches her food. Ress's eyes grew warier as they took in the healing cuts that ran down Kaol's cheek. Two had already scabbed and would fade, but there was a long, surprisingly deep one that was still tender. Kaol wondered whether it would scar. He'd deserve it if it did. I'm probably overstepping my bounds, then don't say it. Kaol growled. He knew exactly what Ress would say. The same thing Philippa said, and anyone who saw him and gave him that pitying glance. You should try talking to her. He didn't know how word had gotten out so quickly that she'd tried to kill him, but it seemed they all knew how deep the break between him and Selena went. He thought the two of them had been discreet, and he knew Philippa wasn't a gossip. but perhaps what he felt for her had been written all over him. And what she now felt for him. He resisted the urge to touch the cuts on his face.
"I still want the watch posted outside her door and windows," he ordered Ress.
He was on his way to another meeting, another shouting match about how they should deal with the fallout in Eelway over the princess's death.
"Don't stop her if she leaves, but try to slow her down a bit."
Long enough for word to get to him that she'd finally left her rooms. If anyone was going to intercept Selena, if anyone would confront her about what happened to Nehemia, it would be him. Until then, he'd give her the space she needed, even if it killed him not to speak to her. She'd become entwined in his life, from the morning runs to the lunches to the kisses she stole from him when no one was looking. And now, without her, he felt hollow. But he still didn't know how he'd ever look her in the eye. "You will always be my enemy." She'd meant it. Ress nodded.
"Consider it done."
The young guard saluted as Kaol headed for the meeting room. There would be other meetings today. Lots of meetings, since the debate was still raging over how Otterlin should react to Nehemia's death. And though he hated to admit it, he had other things to worry about than Selena's unending grief. The king had summoned his southern lords and retainers to Rifthold, including Kaol's father. Dorian usually didn't mind Kaol's men, but he did mind being followed around day and night by guards who were on the lookout for any threat. Nehemia's death had proved that the castle was not impregnable. His mother and Holin were sequestered in her chambers, and many of the nobility had either left the city or were lying low, too. Except Roland. Though Roland's mother had fled back to Mia the morning after the princess was assassinated, Roland stayed, insisting that Dorian would need his support now more than ever. And he was right. At the council meetings, which grew more and more crowded as the southern lords arrived, Roland backed every point and objection that Dorian made. Together, they argued against sending more troops into Eelway in case of revolt, and Roland seconded Dorian's proposal that they should publicly apologize to Nehemia's parents for her death. His father had exploded when Dorian suggested that. But Dorian had still written her parents a message, expressing his deepest condolences. His father could go to hell for all he cared. And that was starting to be a problem, he realized as he sat in his tower room and flipped through all the documents he had to read before tomorrow's meeting with the southern lords. He had spent so long being careful to avoid defying his father, but what sort of man could he call himself if he blindly obeyed? "A smart man," a part of him whispered, flickering with that cold, ancient power. At least his four guards stayed outside his rooms. His private tower was high enough that no one could reach the balcony, and only one stair led up and down. Easily defensible. But it also made for an easy cage. Dorian stared at the glass pen on his desk. The night Nehemia had died, he hadn't intended to stop Selena's wrist in midair. He'd just known that the woman he'd loved was about to kill his oldest friend over a misunderstanding. He'd been too far away to grab her as she plunged the blade down. But then, it was like a phantom arm reached out from within him and wrapped around her wrist. He could feel her blood-crusted skin, as if he himself were touching her. But he hadn't known what he was doing. He'd just acted on gut feeling and desperation and need. He had to learn to control this power, whatever it was. If he could control it, then he could keep it from appearing at inopportune times. Like when he was in those damned council meetings and his temper rose, and he felt the magic stirring in response. Dorian took a deep breath, focusing on the pen, willing it to move. He'd stopped Selena mid-strike. He'd thrown a wall of books into the air. He could move a pen. It didn't move. After staring at it until his eyes nearly crossed, Dorian groaned and leaned back in his chair, covering his eyes with his hands. Maybe he'd gone insane. Maybe he'd just imagined the whole thing. Nehemia had once promised to be there when he needed help, when some power in him awoke. She had known. Had her assassin, in killing Nehemia, also killed any hope he had of finding answers? Selena had only started sitting in the chair because Philippa had come in yesterday and complained about the dirty sheets. She might have told Philippa to go to hell, but then she considered who had last shared this bed with her, and was suddenly glad to have them replaced. Any trace of him she wanted gone. As the sun finished setting, she sat before the fire, staring into the glowing embers that grew brighter as the world darkened. Time was shifting and ebbing around her. Some days had passed in an hour, others a lifetime. She had bathed once, long enough to wash her hair, and Philippa had watched the whole time to make sure she didn't drown herself instead. Selena ran a thumb over the armrest of the chair. She had no intention of ending her life, not before she did what needed to be done. The shadows in the room grew, and the embers seemed to breathe as she watched them, breathing with her, pulsing with each heartbeat. In these days of silence and sleep, she'd realized one thing. The assassin had come from outside the palace. Perhaps they had been hired by whoever had initially threatened Nehemia's life. Perhaps not. But they weren't associated with the king. Selena gripped the arms of the chair, her nails digging into the polished wood. It hadn't been one of Arobin's assassins, either. She knew his style, and it wasn't this monstrous. She again went over the details of the bedroom, now branded into her mind. She did know one killer this monstrous. Grave. She'd learned as much about him as she could when she'd faced him in the competition to become King's champion. She'd heard what he did to the bodies of his victims. Her lips pulled back from her teeth. Grave knew the palace. He'd trained here just as she had. And he'd known, too, just whom he was murdering and dismembering, and what it would mean to her. A familiar dark fire rippled in her gut, spreading through her, dragging her down into an abyss without end. Selena Sardothian stood from her chair. Chapter 35. There would be no candles for these midnight deeds. No ivory horn to signal the start of this hunt. She dressed in her darkest tunic and slid a smooth black mask into her cloak pocket. All of her weapons, even the hairpins, had been removed from her rooms. She knew without checking that the doors and windows were being watched. Good. This was not the sort of hunt that began at the front door. Selena locked her bedroom and spared a glance at Fleetfoot, who cowered under the bed as she hauled open the secret door. The dog was still quietly whining as Selena strode into the passage. She didn't need a light to make her way down to the tomb. She knew the path by memory now. Each step. Each turn. Her cloak whispered against the steps. Down and down she went. It was war upon them all. Let them tremble in fear at what they had awoken. Moonlight spilled onto the landing, illuminating the open door of the tomb and Mort's little bronze face. "I'm sorry about your friend," he said with surprising sorrow as she stalked toward him. She didn't reply, and she didn't care how he knew. She just kept walking, through the door and between the sarcophagi, to the heap of treasure piled in the back. Daggers, hunting knives. She took whatever she could strap onto her belt or tuck into her boots. She took a handful of gold and jewels and shoved that into a pocket, too. "What are you doing?" Mort demanded from the hallway. Selena approached the stand that displayed Damaris, Sword of Gavin, first king of Otterlin. The hollowed-out golden pommel glinted in the moonlight as she pulled the scabbard from the stand and strapped it across her back. "That is a sacred sword," Mort hissed, as though he could see inside. Selena smiled grimly as she stalked back to the door, flinging her hood over her head. "Wherever you are going," Mort went on, "whatever you plan to do, you debase that sword by taking it from here. Aren't you afraid of angering the gods?" Selena just laughed quietly before she took the stairs, savoring each step, each movement that brought her closer to her prey. She relished the burn in her arms as she hauled the sewer grate up, rotating the ancient wheel until it was fully raised, dripping with filth, and the water beneath the castle flowed freely into the small river outside. She tossed a piece of broken stone into the river beyond the archway, listening for guards. Not a sound. Not a scrape of armor or a whisper of warning. An assassin had killed Nehemia. An assassin with a taste for the grotesque and a desire for notoriety. Finding Grave would take only a few questions. She tied the chain around the lever, testing its strength, and checked to ensure that Damaris was tightly strapped to her back. Then, gripping the castle stones, she swung around the wall, slithering sideways. She didn't bother to glance up at the castle as she eased around the bank of the river and dropped onto the frozen ground. Then she vanished into the night. Cloaked in darkness, Selena stalked through the streets of Rifthold. She made no sound as she passed through dim alleys. Only one place could provide the answers she wanted. Sewage and puddles of excrement lay beneath every window of the slums, and the cobblestone streets were cracked and misshapen after many hard winters. The buildings leaned against each other, some so ramshackle that even the poorest citizens had abandoned them. On most streets, the taverns overflowed with drunks and whores and everyone else who sought temporary relief from their miserable lives. It made no difference how many saw her. None would bother her tonight. The cape billowed behind her, her face remaining expressionless beneath her obsidian mask as she moved through the streets. The vaults was just a few blocks away. Selena's gloved hands clenched. Once she found out where Grave was hiding, she'd turn his skin inside out. Worse than that, actually. She stopped before a nondescript iron door in a quiet alley. Hired thugs stood watch outside. She flashed them the silver entrance fee, and they opened the door for her. In the subterranean warren below, one could find the cutthroats, the monsters, and the damned of Otterlin. The filth came here to exchange stories and make deals, and it was here that any whisper of Nehemia's assassin would be found. Grave had undoubtedly received a large fee for his services, and could be counted on to now be recklessly spending his blood money, a spree that would not go unnoticed. He wouldn't have left Rifthold. Oh, no. He wanted people to know he killed the princess. He wanted to hear himself named the new Otterlin's assassin. He wanted Selena to know, too. As she headed down the steps into the vaults, the reek of ale and unwashed bodies hit her like a stone to the face. She hadn't been in this sort of festering den for a long while. The main chamber was strategically lit. A chandelier hung in the center of the room, but there was little light to be found along the walls for those who sought not to be seen. All laughter halted as she strode between the tables. Red-rimmed eyes followed her every step. She didn't know the identity of the new crime lord who ruled over this place, and didn't care. Her business wasn't with him, not tonight. She didn't allow herself to look at the many fighting pits that occupied the distant end of the chamber, pits where crowds were still gathered, cheering for whoever fought with fists and feet within. She'd been to the vaults before, many times in those final days before her capture. Now that Iowan Jane and Rourke Farron were dead, the place seemed to have passed into new ownership without losing any of its depravity. Selena walked right up to the barkeep. He didn't recognize her, but she didn't expect him to, not when she'd been so careful to hide her identity all those years. The barkeep was already pale, and his sparse hair had become even sparser over the past year and a half. He tried to peer beneath her cowl as she halted at the bar, but the mask and hood kept her features hidden. "Drink?" he asked, wiping sweat from his brow. Everyone in the bar was still watching her, either discreetly or outright. "No," she said, her voice contorted and deep beneath the mask. The barkeep gripped the edge of the counter.
You're back," he said quietly, as more heads turned. "You escaped."
So he did recognize her then. She wondered if the new owners held a grudge against her for killing Iowan Jane, and how many bodies she'd have to leave in her wake if they decided to start a fight right here, right now. What she planned to do tonight already broke enough rules, crossed too many lines. She leaned on the bar,
crossing one ankle over the other. The barkeep mopped his brow again and poured her a brandy. "On the house," he said, sliding it to her. She caught it in her hand, but didn't drink it. He wet his lips, then asked, How did you escape?" People leaned back in their chairs, straining to hear. Let them spread rumors. Let them hesitate before crossing her path. She hoped Arobin heard, too. She hoped he heard and stayed the hell away from her. "You'll soon discover that," she said, "but I have need of you." His brows lifted.
"Me?"
"I have come to inquire after a man." Her voice was scratchy and hollow. "A man who recently earned a large sum of gold for the assassination of the Eelway princess. He goes by the name of Grave. I need to know where he is."
"I don't know anything."
The barkeep's face turned even paler. She reached into a pocket and pulled out a glittering fistful of ancient jewels and gold. All eyes watched them now.
"Allow me to repeat my question, barkeep."
The assassin who called himself Grave ran. He didn't know how long she'd been hunting him. It had been well over a week since he'd killed the princess. A week, and no one had even looked his way. He thought he'd gotten away with it, and had even started wondering whether he should have been more creative with the body, if he should have left some sort of calling card behind. But all that had changed tonight. He'd been drinking at the counter of his favorite tavern when the packed room had suddenly gone quiet. He'd turned to see her in the doorway as she called out his name, looking more wraith than human. His name hadn't even finished echoing in the room before he burst into a sprint, escaping through the back exit and into the alley. He couldn't hear footsteps, but he knew she was behind him, melting in and out of shadows and mist. He took alleys and side streets, leaping over walls, zigzagging across the slums, anything to shake her, to wear her down. He'd make his final stand in a quiet street. There, he would take out the blade strapped to his skin and make her pay for the way she'd humiliated him in the competition. The way she had sneered at him, the way she'd broken his nose and tossed her handkerchief onto his chest. Haughty, stupid bitch. He staggered as he rounded a corner, his breath ragged and raw. He had only 3 daggers hidden on him. He'd make them count, though. When she'd appeared at the tavern, he had immediately taken note of the broadsword hovering over one of her shoulders, and the assortment of gleaming, wicked-looking blades strapped to her hips. But he could make her pay, even if he only had a few blades. Grave was halfway down the cobblestone alley when he realized it was a dead end, the far wall too high to climb. Here, then. He'd soon have her begging for mercy before he cut her into little, little pieces. Drawing one of his daggers, he smiled and turned to the open street behind him. Blue mist drifted by, and a rat scurried across the narrow passage. There was no noise, only the sounds of distant revelry. Perhaps he had lost her. Those royal fools had made the biggest mistake of their lives when they crowned her champion. His client had said as much when he'd hired Grave. He waited a moment, still watching the open street entrance, and then allowed himself to breathe, surprised to find that he was a little disappointed. King's champion, indeed. It hadn't been hard to lose her at all. And now he would go home, and he'd receive another job offer in a matter of days, and then another, and another. His client had promised him that the offers would come. Arobin Hommel would curse the day he had rejected Grave from the Assassin's Guild for being too cruel with his prey. Grave chuckled, flipping his dagger in his hands. Then she appeared. She came through the fog, no more than a sliver of darkness. She didn't run. She just walked with that insufferable swagger. Grave surveyed the buildings surrounding them. The stone was too slippery and there were no windows. One step at a time, she approached. He would really, really enjoy making her suffer as much as the princess had. Smiling, Grave retreated to the end of the alley, only stopping when his back hit the stone wall. In a narrower space, he could overpower her, and in this forgotten street, he could take his own sweet time doing what he wanted. Still, she approached, and the sword at her back whined as she drew it. The moonlight glinted off the long blade. Probably a gift from her princeling lover. Grave pulled his second dagger from his boot. This wasn't a frilly, ridiculous competition run by nobility. Here, any rules applied. She didn't say anything when she neared. And Grave didn't say anything to her, as he rushed at her, swiping for her head with both blades. She stepped aside, dodging him with maddening ease. Grave lunged again, but faster than he could follow, she ducked and slashed her sword across his shins. He hit the wet ground before he felt the pain. The world flashed black and gray and red, and agony tore at him. A dagger still left in his hand, he scuttled backward toward the wall. But his legs wouldn't respond, and his arm strained to pull him through the damp filth. "Bitch," he hissed. "Bitch!" He hit the wall, blood pouring from his legs. Bone had been sliced. He would not be able to walk. He could still find a way to make her pay, though. She stopped a few feet away and sheathed her sword. She drew a long, jeweled dagger. He swore at her, the filthiest word he could think of. She chuckled, and faster than a striking asp, she had one of his arms against the wall, the dagger glinting. Pain ripped through his right wrist, then his left as it, too, was slammed into the stone. Grave screamed, truly screamed, as he found his arms pinned to the wall by two daggers. His blood was nearly black in the moonlight. He thrashed, cursing her again and again. He would bleed to death unless he pulled his arms from the wall. With otherworldly silence, she crouched before him and lifted his chin with another dagger. Grave panted as she brought her face close to his. There was nothing beneath the cowl, nothing of this world. She had no face. "Who hired you?" she asked, her voice like gravel. "To do what?" he asked, almost sobbing. Maybe he could feign innocence, he could talk his way out, convince this arrogant whore he had nothing to do with it. She turned the dagger, pressing it into his neck. "To kill Princess Nehemia."
No one. I don't know what you're talking about."
And then, without even an intake of breath, she buried another dagger he hadn't realized she'd been holding into his thigh. So deep he felt the reverberation as it hit the cobblestones beneath. His scream shattered out of him, and Grave writhed, his wrists rising farther on the blades.
"Who hired you?" she asked again. Calm. So calm.
"Gold," Grave moaned. "I have gold."
She drew yet another dagger and shoved it into his other thigh, piercing again to the stone. Grave shrieked to gods who did not save him.
"Who hired you?"
"I don't know what you're talking about."
After a heartbeat, she withdrew the daggers from his thighs. He almost soiled himself at the pain, at the relief.
"Thank you."
He wept, even as he thought of how he would punish her. She sat back on her heels and stared at him.
"Thank you."
But then she brought up another dagger, its edge serrated and glinting, and hovered it close to his hand. "Pick a finger," she said. He trembled and shook his head. "Pick a finger."
Please.
A wet warmth filled the seat of his pants. "Thumb it is."
No, I'll tell you everything."
Still, she brought the blade closer until it rested against the base of his thumb.
"Don't. I'll tell you everything."
Chapter 36. Dorian was just starting to feel his temper fray after hours of debate when the doors to his father's council room were thrown open and Selena prowled in, her dark cape billowing behind her. All 20 men at the table fell silent, including his father, whose eyes went straight to the thing dangling from Selena's hand. Kaol was already striding across the room from his post by the door, but he, too, stopped when he beheld the object she carried. A head. The man's face was still set in a scream, and there was something vaguely familiar about the grotesque features and mousy brown hair that she gripped. It was hard to be certain as it swung from her gloved fingers. Kaol put a hand on his sword, his face pale as death. The other guards in the room drew their blades, but didn't move. Wouldn't move, until Kaol or the king commanded them.
"What is this?" the king demanded.
The councilmen and assembled lords were gaping. But Selena was smiling as her eyes locked onto one of the ministers at the table, and she walked right toward him. And no one, not even Dorian's father, said anything as she set the severed head atop the minister's stack of papers.
"I believe this belongs to you," she said, releasing her grip on the hair.
The head lolled to the side with a thud. Then she patted the minister's shoulder before rounding the table and plopping into an empty chair at one end, sprawling across it.
"Explain yourself," the king growled at her.
She crossed her arms, smiling at the minister, whose face had turned green as he stared at the head before him.
"I had a little chat with Grave about Princess Nehemia last night," she said.
Grave, the assassin from the competition, and Minister Mollison's champion. "He sends his regards, Minister. He also sends this." She tossed something onto the long table. A small golden bracelet, engraved with lotus blossoms. Something Nehemia would have worn.
"Here's a lesson for you, Minister, from one professional to another. Cover your tracks, and hire assassins without personal connections to you, and perhaps try not to do it so soon after you've publicly argued with your target."
Mollison was looking at the king with pleading eyes.
"I didn't do this."
He recoiled from the severed head.
"I have no idea what she's talking about. I'd never do something like this."
"That's not what Grave said," Selena crooned.
Dorian could only stare at her. This was different from the feral creature she'd become the night Nehemia had died. What she was right now. The edge on which she was balancing. Word help them all. But then Kaol was at her chair, grasping her elbow.
"What the hell do you think you're doing?"
Selena looked up at him and smiled sweetly.
"Your job, apparently."
She shook off his grip with a thrash, then got out of her seat, stalking around the table. She pulled a piece of paper out of her tunic and tossed it in front of the king. The impertinence in that throw should have earned her a trip to the gallows, but the king said nothing. Following her around the table, a hand still on his sword, Kaol watched her with a face like stone. Dorian began praying they wouldn't come to blows. Not here. Not again. If it riled his magic and his father saw. Dorian wouldn't even think of that power when he was in a room with so many potential enemies. He was sitting beside the person who would give the order to have him put down. His father took the paper. From where he sat, Dorian could see that it was a list of names, at least 15 long.
"Before the unfortunate death of the princess," she said, "I took it upon myself to eliminate some traitors to the crown. My target," she said, and he knew his father was aware she meant Archer, "led me right to them."
Dorian couldn't look at her for a moment longer. This couldn't be the whole truth. But she had gone after them to hunt them down. She'd gone to save Kaol. So why lie now? Why pretend she'd been hunting them? What sort of game was she playing? Dorian looked across the table. Minister Mollison was still trembling at the severed head in front of him. He wouldn't have been surprised if the minister vomited right there. He was the one who had made the anonymous threat against Nehemia's life? After a moment, his father looked up from the list and surveyed her.
"Well done, champion. Well done indeed."
Then Selena and the King of Otterland smiled at each other, and it was the most terrifying thing Dorian had ever seen.
"Tell my exchequer to give you double last month's payment," the king said.
Dorian felt his gorge rise, not just for the severed head and her blood-stiffened clothing, but also for the fact that he could not, for the life of him, find the girl he had loved anywhere in her face. And from Kaol's expression, he knew his friend felt the same. Selena bowed dramatically to the king, flourishing a hand before her. Then, with a smile devoid of any warmth, She stared down Kaol before stalking from the room, her dark cape sweeping behind her. Silence. And then Dorian's attention returned to Minister Mullison, who merely whispered, "Please," before the king ordered Kaol to have him dragged to the dungeons.
Selena wasn't done. Not nearly. Perhaps the bloodletting was over, but she still had another person to visit before she could return to her bedroom and wash off the stink of Graves' blood. Archer was resting when she arrived at his townhouse, and his butler didn't dare stop her as she strode up the carpeted front steps, stormed down the elegant wood-paneled hallway, and flung open the double doors to what could only have been his room. Archer jolted in bed, wincing as he put a hand to his bandaged shoulder. Then he took in her appearance, the dagger still strapped to her waist. He went very, very still.
"I'm sorry," he said. She stood at the foot of his bed, staring down at him, at his wan face and injured shoulder.
"You're sorry? Kaol sorry? The whole damn world is sorry. Tell me what you and your movement want. Tell me what you know about the king's plans."
"I didn't want to lie to you," Archer said gently. "But I needed to know that I could trust you before I told you the truth. Nehemia,"
she tried not to wince at the name,
"said you could be trusted, but I needed to know for sure. And I needed you to trust me, too."
"So you thought kidnapping Kaol would make me trust you?"
"We kidnapped him because we thought he and the king were planning to hurt her. I needed you to come to that warehouse and hear from Westfall's lips that he was aware there had been threats to her safety, and he didn't tell you. To realize that he is the enemy. If I'd known you would go so berserk, I never would have done it."
She shook her head. "That list you sent me yesterday, of the men from the warehouse, they're truly dead?"
"You killed them, yes."
Guilt punched through her. "For my part, I am sorry."
And she was.
She'd memorized their names, tried to recall their faces.
She would carry the weight of their deaths forever.
Even Graves' death, what she'd done to him in that alley. She'd never forget that, either. "I gave their names to the king. It should keep him from looking in your direction for a little while longer. 5 days, at most."
Archer nodded, sinking back into the pillows.
"Nehemia really worked with you?"
"It was why she came to Rifthold, to see what could be done about organizing a force in the north, to give us information directly from the castle.
As Selena had always suspected.
Her loss."
He closed his eyes.
"We can't replace her."
Selena swallowed.
"But you could,"
Archer said, looking at her again.
"I know you came from Terrasen, so part of you has to realize that Terrasen must be free."
"You are nothing more than a coward." She kept her face blank.
"Be our eyes and ears in the castle,"
Archer whispered.
"Help us. Help us, and we can find a way to save everyone, to save you. We don't know what the king plans to do, only that he somehow found a source of power outside magic, and that he's probably using that power to create monstrosities of his own. But to what end, we don't know. That's what Nehemia was trying to discover, and it's knowledge that could save us all."
She would digest all that later. Much later. For now, she stared at Archer, then looked down at her blood-stiffened clothing. "I found the man who killed Nehemia."
Archer's eyes widened. "And?"
She turned to walk out of the room. "And the debt has been paid. Minister Mullison hired him to get rid of a thorn in his side, because she put him down one too many times in council meetings. The minister is now in the dungeons awaiting his trial. And she would be there for every minute of that trial, and the execution afterward." Archer loosed a sigh as she put her hand on the doorknob. She looked over her shoulder at him, at the fear and sadness on his face.
"You took an arrow for me,"
she said quietly, gazing at the bandages.
"It was the least I could do after I caused that whole mess."
She chewed on her lip and opened the door. "We have 5 days until the king expects you to be dead. Prepare yourself and your allies."
But
nothing, she interrupted. "Consider yourself fortunate that I'm not going to rip out your throat for the stunt you pulled. Arrow or no arrow, and regardless of my relationship with Kaol, you lied to me and kidnapped my friend. If it hadn't been for that, for you, I would have been at the castle that night.
She fixed him with a stare.
I'm done with you. I want your information. I'm not going to give you information, and I don't particularly care what happens to you once you leave this city, as long as I never see you again.
She took a step into the hallway.
Selena?
She looked over her shoulder.
I am sorry. I know how much you meant to her, and she to you.
The weight she'd been avoiding since she'd gone to hunt graves suddenly fell on her, and her shoulders drooped. She was so tired. Now that Grave was dead, now that Minister Mullison was in the dungeon, now that she had no one left to maim and punish, she was so, so tired.
5 days. I'll be back in 5 days. If you aren't prepared to leave Rifthold, then I won't bother faking your death. I'll kill you before you know I'm in the room.
Kaol kept his face blank and his shoulders thrown back as his father surveyed him. The small breakfast room in his father's suite was sunny and silent, pleasant even. But Kaol remained in the doorway as he looked at his father for the first time in 10 years. The Lord of Aniel looked mostly the same, his hair a bit grayer, but his face still ruggedly handsome, far too similar to Kaol's for his own liking.
The breakfast is growing cold, his father said, waving a broad hand to the table and the empty chair across from him. His first words.
Kaol clenched his jaw so hard it hurt as he walked across the bright room and slid into the chair. His father poured him a glass of juice and said without looking at him,
At least you fill out your uniform.
Thanks to your mother's blood, your brother is all gangly limbs and awkward angles.
Kaol bristled at the way his father spat your mother's blood, but made himself pour a cup of tea, then butter a slice of bread.
Are you just going to keep quiet, or are you going to say something?
What could I possibly have to say to you?
His father gave him a thin smile.
A polite son would inquire after the state of his family.
I haven't been your son for 10 years. I don't see why I should start acting like one now.
His father's eyes flicked to the sword at Kaol's side, examining, judging, weighing.
Kaol reined in the urge to walk out. It had been a mistake to accept his father's invitation. He should have burned the note he received last night.
But after he'd ensured that Minister Mullison was locked up, the king's lecture about Selena making a fool out of him and his guards had somehow worn through his better judgment. And Selena, he had no idea how she'd gotten out of her rooms. None. The guards had been alert and had reported no noise. The windows hadn't been opened, and neither had her front door. And when he asked Philippa, she only said that the bedroom door had been locked all night. Selena was keeping secrets again. She'd lied to the king about the men she'd killed in the warehouse to rescue him. And there were other mysteries lurking around, mysteries that he'd better start figuring out if he was to stand a chance of surviving her wrath. What his men had reported about the body that had been found in that alley.
Tell me what you've been up to.
What do you wish to know?
Kaol said flatly, not touching his food or drink. His father leaned back in his seat, a movement that had once made Kaol start sweating. It usually meant that his father was about to focus all of his attention on him, that he would judge and consider and dole out punishment for any weakness, any missteps. But Kaol was a grown man now, and he answered only to his king.
Are you enjoying the position you sacrificed your lineage to attain?
Yes.
I suppose I have you to thank for being dragged to Rifthold. And if Eelwe rises up, then I suppose we can all thank you as well.
It took every ounce of will he had, but Kaol just took a bite from his bread and stared at his father. Something like approval flickered in the man's eyes, and he took a bite of his own bread before he said,
Do you have a woman, at least?
The effort it took to keep his face blank was considerable.
No.
His father smiled slowly.
You were always a horrible liar.
Kaol looked toward the window, toward the cloudless day that was revealing the first hint of spring.
For your sake, I hope she's at least of noble blood.
For my sake.
You might have spat on your lineage, but you are still a Westfall, and we do not marry scullery maids.
Kael snorted, shaking his head. I'll marry whomever I please, whether she's a scullery maid or a princess or a slave, and it'll be none of your damn business.
His father folded his hands in front of him. After a long silence, he said quietly, Your mother misses you.
She wants you home.
The breath was knocked out of him, but he kept his face blank, his tone steady, as he said,
And do you, father?
His father stared right at him, through him.
If Ilwe rises up in retaliation, if we find ourselves facing a war, then Aniel will need a strong heir.
If you've groomed Terran to be your heir, then I'm sure he'll do just fine.
Terran is a scholar, not a warrior. He was born that way. If Ilwe rebels, there is a good chance that the wild men in the Fangs will rise up too. Aniel will be the first place they sack. They've been dreaming of revenge for too long.
Kael wondered just how much this was grating on his father's pride, and part of him truly wanted to make him suffer for it. But he'd had enough of suffering, and enough of hatred. And he hardly had any fight left in him now that Selena had made it clear she'd sooner eat hot coals than look at him with affection in her eyes. Now that Selena was gone. So he just said,
My position is here. My life is here.
Your people need you. They will need you. Would you be so selfish as to turn your back on them?
The way my father turned his back on me.
His father smiled again, a cruel, cold thing.
You disgraced your family when you gave up your title. You disgraced me. But you have made yourself useful these years, made the Crown Prince rely upon you.
And when Dorian is king, he'll reward you for it, won't he?
He could make Aniel a duchy and bless you with lands large enough to rival Parrington's territory around Morath.
What is it that you really want, father? To protect your people or to use my friendship with Dorian to your gain?
Would you throw me in the dungeons if I said both? I hear you like to do that to the people who dare provoke you these days.
And then there was that gleam in his eyes that told Kael just how much his father already knew.
Perhaps if you do, your woman and I can exchange notes about the conditions.
If you want me back in Aniel, you're not doing a very good job of convincing me.
Do I need to convince you? You failed to protect the princess, and that has created the possibility of war. The assassin who was warming your bed now wants nothing more than to spill your innards on the ground. What's left for you here, except more shame?
Kael slammed his hands on the table, rattling the dishes.
Enough!
He didn't want his father knowing anything about Selena, or about the remaining fragments of his heart. He wouldn't let his servants change the sheets on his bed because they still smelled like her, because he went to sleep dreaming that she was still lying beside him.
I have worked for 10 years to be in this position, and it'll take far more than a few taunts from you to get me back to Aniel. And if you think Terran is weak, then send him to me for training. Maybe here he'll learn how real men act.
Kael shoved his chair away from the table, rattling the dishes again, and stormed to the door. 5 minutes. He'd lasted less than 5 minutes. He paused in the doorway and looked back at his father. The man was smiling faintly at him, still taking him in, still assessing how useful he would be.
You talk to her? You so much as look in her direction?
Kael warned.
And father or not, I'll make you wish you'd never set foot in this castle.
And though he didn't wait to hear what his father had to say, Kael left with the sinking feeling that he'd somehow just stepped right into his father's snare. Chapter 37. There was no one else to carry out this task. Not with Ilwe soldiers and ambassadors still on their way to retrieve Nehemia's body from where it lay interred in the royal plot. As Selena opened the door to the room that had smelled of blood and pain, she saw that someone had cleaned away all traces of gore. The mattress was gone, and Selena paused in the doorway as she surveyed the skeleton of the bed frame. Perhaps it would be best to leave Nehemia's belongings to the people who came to bring her back to Ilwe. But would they be friends of hers? The thought of strangers touching Nehemia's belongings, packing them away like any other objects, made her wild with grief and rage. Almost as wild as she'd been earlier today,
when she'd walked into her own dressing room and ripped every gown off its hanger, pulled out every pair of shoes, every tunic, every ribbon and cloak, and thrown them into the hallway. She'd burned the dresses that reminded her most of Nehemia, the dresses she'd worn at their lessons, at their meals, and on their walks around the castle. It was only when Philippa came in to scold her about the smoke that Selena had relented, allowing her to take whatever clothing survived and donate it. But it had been too late to stop Selena from burning the dress she'd worn the night of Kael's birthday. That gown had burned first. And when her dressing room was empty, she shoved a bag of gold into Philippa's hands and told her to go buy some new clothes. Philippa had only given her a sad look, another thing that made Selena sick, and left. It took Selena an hour to gently, carefully pack up Nehemia's clothes and jewelry, and she tried not to dwell too long on the memories that accompanied each item, or the lotus blossom smell that clung to everything. When she had sealed all the trunks, she went to Nehemia's desk, which was still littered with papers and books as if the princess had only stepped outside for a moment. As she reached for the first paper, her eyes fell upon the arc of scars around her right hand, the teeth marks of the Ritterrack. The papers were covered with scribblings in Eelway and word marks. Countless word marks, some in long lines, some forming symbols like the one Nehemia had traced underneath Selena's bed all those months ago. How had the king's spies not taken these, or had he not even bothered to have her room searched? She started stacking them into a pile. Perhaps she could still learn some things about the marks, even if Nehemia were dead, she made herself think. Nehemia is dead. Selena looked at the scars on her hand again, and was about to turn from the desk when she spotted a familiar-looking book half-tucked beneath some papers. It was the book from Davis's office. This copy was older, more damaged, but it was the same book. And written on the inside cover was a sentence in word marks, such basic marks that even Selena could understand them. Do not trust. The final symbol, though, was a mystery. It looked like a wyvern, the royal seal. Of course she shouldn't trust the King of Otterlin. She flipped through the book, scanning it for any information. Nothing. And then she turned to the back cover. And there, Nehemia had written, "It is only with the eye that one can see rightly." It was scribbled in the common tongue, then in Eelway, then in some other languages that Selena didn't recognize. Different translations, as if Nehemia had wondered whether the riddle held any meaning in another tongue. The same book, the same riddle, the same writing in the back. "An idle lord's nonsense," Nehemia had said. But Nehemia, an archer, led the group to which Davis had belonged. Nehemia had known Davis, known him and lied about it, lied about the riddle, and Nehemia had promised that there would be no more secrets between them, promised and lied, promised and deceived her. She fought down a scream as she tore through every other piece of paper on the desk, in the room. Nothing. What else had Nehemia lied about? "It is only with the eye." Selena touched her necklace. Nehemia had known about the tomb. If she had been feeding information to this group, and had encouraged Selena to look into the eye carved into the wall, then Nehemia had been looking too. But after the duel, she'd returned the eye of Elena to Selena. If Nehemia had needed it, she would have kept it. An archer hadn't mentioned knowing anything about this. Unless this wasn't the eye the riddle referenced, because "By the word," Selena breathed, and rushed out of the room. Mort hissed when she appeared at the door to the tomb. "Plan on desecrating any other sacred objects tonight?" Carrying a satchel full of papers and books that she'd grabbed from her rooms, Selena merely patted his head as she walked by. His bronze teeth clanked against each other as he sought to bite her. The tomb was filled with moonlight bright enough to see by. And there, directly across the tomb from the eye in the wall, was another eye, golden and gleaming. Damaris. It was Damaris, the Sword of Truth. Gavin could see nothing but what was right. It is only with the eye that one can see rightly.
Am I so blind?
Selena dumped her leather satchel on the floor, the books and papers spilling across the stones.
It appears so, Mort sang.
The eye-shaped pommel was the exact size. Selena lifted the sword from its stand and unsheathed it. The word marks on the blade seemed to ripple. She rushed back to the wall.
In case you didn't realize, called Mort, you're supposed to hold the eye against the hole in the wall and look through it.
I know that, snapped Selena. And so, not daring to breathe the entire time, Selena lifted the pommel to the hole until both eyes were evenly aligned. She stood on her toes and peered in, and groaned. It was a poem, a lengthy poem. Selena fished out the parchment and charcoal she'd stashed in her pocket and copied down the words, darting to and from the wall as she read, memorized, double-checked, and then recorded. It was only when she had finished the last stanza that she read it aloud.
By the Volg, three were made, of the gate-stone of the word. Obsidian the gods forbade, and stone they greatly feared. In grief he hid one in the crown, of her he loved so well, to keep with her where she lay down inside the starry cell. The second one was hidden in a mountain made of fire, where all men were forbidden, despite their greatest desires. Where the third lies will never be told, by voice or tongue or sum of gold.
Selena shook her head. More nonsense. And the rhyme with word and feared was off, not to mention the break in the rhyme scheme in the final lines.
Since you clearly knew that the sword could be used to read the riddle, she said to Mort, then why don't you save me some trouble and tell me what the hell this one's about?
Mort sniffed.
It sounds to me like it's a riddle giving the location of three very powerful items.
She read through the poem again. But three what? Sounds like the second thing is hidden in a volcano? And the first and third ones? She gritted her teeth.
Gatestone of the word.
What is this a riddle for? And why is it here?
Isn't that the question of the millennia? Mort crowed as Selena walked back to the papers and books she'd scattered at the other end of the tomb.
You'd better clean up the mess you brought down here, or I'll ask the gods to send some wicked beastie after you.
Already happened. Cain beat you to it months ago. She replaced Damaris in its stand.
Too bad the Ritterak didn't take you off the door when he burst through.
A thought hit her, and she stared at the wall in front of her, where she'd once fallen to avoid being ripped apart.
Who was it that moved the carcass of the Ritterak?
Princess Nehemia, of course. Selena twisted to look toward the doorway.
Nehemia?
Mort made a choking sound and cursed his loose tongue.
Nehemia was here? But I only brought her to the tomb.
Mort's bronze face gleamed in the light of the candle she'd set before the door.
You're telling me that Nehemia came here after the Ritterak attacked? That she knew about this place all along? And you're only telling me now?
Mort closed his eyes.
Not my business.
Another deceit. Another mystery.
I suppose if Cain could get down here, then there are other entrances, she said.
Don't ask me where they are, Mort said, reading her mind. I've never left this door.
She had a feeling it was another lie. He always seemed to know about the layout of the tomb and when she was touching things she shouldn't be.
Then what use are you? Brandon just made you to piss everyone off? He did have a sense of humor like that.
The thought of Mort actually having known the ancient Fae King made her quake inside.
I thought you had powers. You can't just speak some nonsense words and have the meaning of the riddle be revealed to me.
Of course not. And isn't the journey more important than the end?
No, she spat, spewing a concoction of curses that could have curdled milk.
Selena tucked the paper into her pocket. She would need to study this riddle at length. If these items were things that Nehemia was looking for, things that she'd lied about to keep secret, Selena might be able to accept that Archer and his friends were capable of good, but she certainly didn't trust them to hold an object with the power that the riddle mentioned. If they were already looking, then perhaps it was in her best interest to find the items before anyone else. Nehemia hadn't figured out that the eye riddle referred to Damaris, but had she known what the three objects were? Maybe she'd pursued the eye riddle because she was trying to find the objects before the king did. The king's plans, had they been to find these things? She picked up her candle and strode from the room.
Has the questing spirit seized you at last?
Not yet, she said as she walked by. Once she found out what the three items were, then maybe she'd consider finding a way to go after them. Even if the only volcanoes she knew about were in the desert peninsula, and there was no way in hell the king would let her go off on her own for such a long trip.
It's a pity that I'm attached to this door, sighed Mort. Imagine all the trouble you'll get into while trying to solve the riddle.
He was right, and as Selena walked up the winding stair, she found herself wishing that he actually could move about. Then she'd at least have one person to discuss this with. If she did have to go hunt these things down, whatever they were, then she'd have no one to go with her. There was no one who knew the truth. The truth. She snorted. What truth was there now? That she had no one left to talk to? That Nehemia had lied through her teeth about so many things? That the king might be searching for an earth-shattering source of power? That he might already have something like this? Archer had mentioned a source of power outside of magic. Was that what these things were? Nehemia had to have known. Selena slowed, the candle guttering in a damp breeze through the stairwell, and slumped onto a step, bracing her arms on her knees. What else were you hiding, Nehemia? She whispered into the darkness. Selena didn't need to turn to know who sat behind her, when something silver and glimmering shone in the corner of her eye. I thought you were too exhausted to come here, she said to the First Queen of Otterlin. I can only stay for a few moments, Elena said, her dress rustling as she took a seat a few steps up from Selena. It seemed a distinctly unqueen-like thing to do. Together they stared into the gloom of the stairwell, Selena's breathing the only sound. She supposed Elena didn't need to breathe, didn't make any sounds unless she wanted to. Selena gripped her knees. What was it like? She asked quietly. Painless, Elena said with equal quiet. Painless and easy. Were you frightened? I was a very old woman, surrounded by my children and their children and their children's children. I had nothing to be afraid of when the time came. Where did you go? A soft laugh. You know I can't tell you that. Selena's lips wobbled. She didn't die an old woman in her bed. No, she didn't. But when her spirit left her body, there was no more pain, no more fear. She is safe now. Selena nodded. Elena's dress rustled again, and then she was on the step beside her, an arm around her shoulders. She hadn't realized how cold she was until she found herself leaning into Elena's warmth. The queen didn't say anything, as Selena buried her face in her hands and wept at last. There was one last thing she had to do, perhaps the hardest and the worst of all the things she had done since Nehemia had died. The moon was overhead, casting the world in silver. Even though they didn't recognize her in her current attire, the night watch at the royal mausoleum hadn't stopped her as she passed through the iron gates at the back of one of the castle gardens. Nehemia wouldn't be entombed inside the white marble building, though. Inside was for the royal family. Selena walked around the domed building, feeling as if the wyverns carved into the side stared at her as she passed. The few people still active at this hour had quickly looked away as she made her way here. She didn't blame them. A black dress and a sheer, flowing black veil spoke enough about her grief and kept everyone at a long, long distance, as though her sorrow were a plague. But she didn't give a damn what the others thought. The mourning clothes weren't for them. She rounded the back of the mausoleum and beheld the rows of graves in the gravel garden behind it, the pale and worn stones illuminated by the moon. Statues depicting everything from mourning gods to dancing maidens marked the resting places of distinguished nobility, some so lifelike they seemed to be people frozen in stone. It had not snowed since before Nehemia's murder, so it was easy enough to spot the grave by the upturned earth before it. There were no flowers, not even a headstone. Just fresh soil and a sword thrust into the earth, one of the curved swords of Nehemia's fallen guards. Apparently, no one had bothered to give her anything more, not when she would be retrieved and brought back to Ilway. Selena stared at the dark, tilled earth, a chill wind rustling her veil. Her chest ached, but this was the one last thing she had to do, the one last honor she could give her friend. Selena tilted her head to the sky, closed her eyes, and began to sing. Kaol had told himself that he was only following Selena to make sure she didn't hurt herself or anyone else, but as she'd neared the royal mausoleum, he followed her for other reasons. The night provided good cover, but the moon was bright enough to keep him back, far enough away so she wouldn't see or hear his approach. But then he saw where she had stopped, and realized he had no right to be here for this. He'd been about to turn away when she lifted her face to the moon and sang. It was not in any language that he knew, not in the common tongue, or in Ilway, or in the languages of Fenhair or Melisande or anywhere else on the continent. This language was ancient, each word full of power and rage and agony. She did not have a beautiful voice, and many of the words sounded like half-sobs, the vowels stretched by the pangs of sorrow, the consonants hardened by anger. She beat her breast in time, so full of savage grace, so at odds with the black gown and veil she wore. The hair on the back of his neck stood as the lament poured from her mouth, unearthly and foreign, a song of grief so old that it predated the stone castle itself. And then the song finished, its end as brutal and sudden as Nehemia's death had been. She stood there for a few moments, silent and unmoving. He was about to walk away when she half-turned to him. Her thin silver circlet shimmered in the moonlight, weighing down a veil so concealing that only he had recognized her. A breeze whipped past them, making the branches of the trees moan and creak, setting her veil and skirts billowing to one side. "Selena," he pleaded. She didn't move, her stillness the only sign that she'd heard him, and that she had no interest in talking. What could he ever say to repair the rift between them anyway? He'd kept information from her, even if he hadn't been directly responsible for Nehemia's death. If either girl had been more alert, they might have had their own defenses prepared. The loss she felt, the stillness with which she watched him, it was all his fault. If the punishment for that was losing her, then he'd endure it. So Kaol walked away, her lament still echoing through the night around him, carried on the wind like the pealing of distant bells. Chapter 38. The dawn was chill and gray as Selena stood in the familiar field of the game park, a large stick dangling between her gloved fingers. Fleetfoot sat before her, her tail slashing through the long, dried grass that poked up through the remaining layer of snow. But the hound didn't whine or bark for the stick to be thrown. No, Fleetfoot just kept sitting there, watching the palace far behind them, waiting for someone who was never going to arrive. Selena stared across the barren field, listening to the sighing grasses. No one had tried to stop her from leaving her rooms last night, or this morning. Yet even though the guards were gone, whenever she left her room, Ress had an uncanny habit of accidentally running into her. She didn't care if he reported her movements to Kaol. She didn't even care that Kaol had been spying on her at Nehemia's grave last night. Let him think what he would about the song. With a sharp intake of breath, she hurled the stick as hard as she could, so far it blended in with the cloudy morning sky. She didn't hear it land. Fleetfoot turned to look up at Selena, her golden eyes full of questions. Selena reached down to stroke the warm head, the long ears, the slender muzzle. But the question remained. Selena said, "She's never coming back." The dog kept waiting.
Dorian had spent half the night in the library, searching in forgotten crevices, scouring every dark corner, every hidden nook, for any books on magic. There were none. It wasn't surprising, but given how many books were in the library, and how many twisting passageways there were, he was a little disappointed that nothing of worth could be found. He didn't even know what he would do with a book like that once he found it. He couldn't bring it back to his rooms, since his servants were likely to find it there. He would probably have to put it back in its hiding place, and return to it whenever he could. He was scanning a bookshelf built into a stone alcove when he heard footsteps. Immediately, just as he'd rehearsed, he took out the book he'd tucked into his jacket and leaned against the wall, opening to a random page. "It's a little dark for reading," a female voice said. She sounded so normal, so like herself that Dorian nearly dropped the book. Selena was standing a few feet away, arms crossed. Pitter-pattering feet echoed against the floors, and a moment later Dorian braced himself against the wall as Fleetfoot flung herself at him, all wagging tail and bountiful kisses. "Gods, you're huge," he told the dog. She licked his cheek one last time and sprinted off down the hall. Dorian watched her go, brows raised. "I'm fairly certain that whatever she's about to do, it won't make the librarians happy." "She knows to stick to the poetry and mathematics books." Selena's face was grave and pale, but her eyes shone with faint amusement. She wore a dark blue tunic he'd never seen before, with golden embroidery that glinted in the dim light. In fact, her whole outfit looked new. The silence that settled between them made him shift on his feet. What could he possibly say to her? The last time they'd been this close, she'd grazed her nails across his neck. He'd had nightmares about that moment. "Can I help you find anything?" he asked her. "Keep it normal, keep it simple. Crown Prince and Royal Librarian?" "Unofficial Royal Librarian," he said. "A title hard won after many years of hiding here to avoid stuffy meetings, my mother, and, well, everything else."
"And here I was, thinking you just hid in your little tower."
Dorian laughed softly, but the sound somehow killed the amusement in her eyes, as if the sound of merriment was too raw against the wound of Nehemia's death. "Keep it simple," he reminded himself. "So, is there a book I can help you find? If that's a list of titles in your hand, then I could look them up in the catalog."
"No," she said, folding the papers in half. "No, there's no book. I just wanted a walk."
And he'd just come to a dark corner of the library to read. But he didn't push it, if only because she could easily start asking him questions, too. If she remembered what had happened when she attacked Kaol, that is. He hoped she didn't. There was a muffled shriek from somewhere in the library, followed by a string of howled curses and the familiar pitter-patter of paws on stone. Then Fleetfoot came sprinting down the row, a scroll of paper in her jaws.
"Wicked beast!" a man was shouting. "Come back here at once!"
Fleetfoot just zoomed on by, a blur of gold. A moment later, when the little librarian came waddling into view and asked if they'd seen a dog, Selena only shook her head and said that she had heard something from the opposite direction. And then she told him to keep his voice down because this was a library. His eyes shooting daggers at her, the man huffed and scuttled away, his shouting a bit softer. When he was gone, Dorian turned to her, brows high on his head. "That scroll could have been invaluable." She shrugged. "He looked like he could use the exercise." And then she was smiling, hesitantly at first. Then she shook her head, and the smile bloomed wide enough to show her teeth. It was only when she looked at him again that he realized he'd been staring, trying to sort out the difference between this smile and the smile she'd given his father the day she'd put Graves' head on the council table. As if she could read his thoughts, she said,
"I apologize for my behavior lately. I haven't been myself."
Or she'd just been a part of herself that she usually kept on a tight, tight leash, he thought. But he said,
"I understand."
And from the way her eyes softened, he knew that was all he'd ever needed to say. Kaol wasn't hiding from his father.
He wasn't hiding from Selena, and he wasn't hiding from his men, who now felt some ridiculous urge to look after him. But the library did offer a good amount of refuge and privacy. Maybe answers, too. The head librarian wasn't in the little office tucked into the walls of the library, so Kaol had asked an apprentice. The gawking youth pointed, gave some vague directions, and told him good luck. Kaol followed the boy's directions up a sweeping flight of black marble stairs and along the mezzanine rail. He was about to turn down an aisle of books when he heard them speaking. Actually, he heard Fleetfoot's prancing first, and looked over the marble rail in time to see Selena and Dorian walking toward the towering main doors. They were a comfortable, casual distance apart, but she was talking. Her shoulders were relaxed, her gait smooth. So different from the woman of shadow and darkness that he'd seen yesterday. What were the two of them doing here, together? It wasn't his business. Frankly, he was grateful that she was talking to anyone and not burning her clothes or butchering rogue assassins. Still, something twanged in his heart that Dorian was the one beside her. But she was talking. So Kaol quickly turned from the balcony rail and walked deeper into the library, trying to shove the image from his mind. He found Harlan Sensel, the head librarian, huffing and puffing down one of the main paths through the library, shaking a fistful of paper shreds at the air around him. Sensel was so busy cursing that he hardly noticed when Kaol stepped in his path. The librarian had to tilt his head back to see Kaol, and then frowned at him. "Good, you're here," Sensel said, and resumed walking. "Higgins must have sent word." Kaol had no idea what Sensel was talking about.
"Is there some issue that you need assistance with?"
"Issue?" Sensel waved the shredded papers. "There are feral beasts running amok in my library. Who let that creature in here? I demand that they pay." Kaol had had a feeling that Selena had something to do with this. He just hoped she and Fleetfoot were out of the library before Sensel reached the office.
"What sort of scroll was damaged? I'll see to it that they replace it."
"Replace it?" Sensel sputtered. "Replace this?"
"What exactly is it?"
"A letter! A letter from a very close friend of mine!"
He bit back his annoyance. "If it's just a letter, then I don't think that the creature's owner can offer a payment. Though perhaps they'd be happy to donate a few books and..."
"Throw them in the dungeons! My library has become little more than a circus. Did you know that there's a cloaked person skulking about the stacks at all hours of the night? They probably unleashed that horrible beast in the library. So track them down and..."
"The dungeons are full," Kaol lied. "But I'll look into it."
While Sensel finished his rant about the truly exhausting hunt he'd gone on to retrieve the letter, Kaol debated whether he should just leave. But he had questions, and once they reached the mezzanine and he was certain that Selena, Fleetfoot, and Dorian were long gone, he said,
"I have a question for you, sir."
Sensel preened at the honorific, and Kaol tried his best to look uninterested.
"If I wanted to look up funeral dirges, laments, from other kingdoms, where would be the best place to start?"
Sensel gave him a confused look, then said, "What a dreadful subject." Kaol shrugged and took a shot in the dark.
"One of my men is from Terrasen, and his mother recently died, so I'd like to honor him by learning one of their songs."
"Is that what the king pays you to do? Learn sad songs with which to serenade your men?"
He almost snorted at the idea of serenading his men, but shrugged again. "Are there any books where those songs might be?" Even a day later, he couldn't get the song out of his head, couldn't stop the chill that went up his neck when its words echoed through his mind. And then there were those other words, the words that had changed everything. "You will always be my enemy."
She was hiding something, a secret she kept locked up so tight that only the horror and shattering loss of that night could have made her slip in such a way. So the more he could discover about her, the better chance he stood of being prepared when the secret came to light. The little librarian said, walking down the main steps. "Well, most of the songs were never written down, and why would they be?"
"Surely the scholars in Terrasen recorded some of them. Orinth had the greatest library in Aurelia at one time,"
Kaol countered.
That they did, Sensel said, a twinge of sorrow in his words. But I don't think anyone ever bothered to write down their dirges, at least not in a way that would have made it here.
What about in other languages? My guard from Terrasen mentioned something about a dirge he once heard sung in another tongue, though he never learned what it was.
The librarian stroked his silver beard. Another language? Everyone in Terrasen speaks the common tongue. No one spoke in a different language there for 1,000 years.
They were close to the office, and he knew that once they arrived, the little bastard would probably shut him out until he'd brought Fleetfoot to justice.
Kaol pressed a bit harder.
So there are no dirges in Terrasen that are sung in a different language?
No, he said, drawing out the word as he pondered. But I once heard that in the High Court of Terrasen, when the nobility died, they sang their laments in the language of the Fae.
Kaol's blood froze, and he almost tripped, but he managed to keep walking and say, Would those songs have been known by everyone, not just the nobility?
Oh, no, Sensel said, only half listening as he recited whatever history was in his head. Those songs were sacred to the court. Only those of noble blood ever learned or sang them. They were taught and sung in secret. Their dead buried by the light of the moon, when no other ears could hear them. At least that's what rumor claimed. I'll admit to my own morbid curiosity in that I'd hoped to hear them 10 years ago. But by the time the slaughter had ended, there was no one left in those noble houses to sing them.
No one, except... You will always be my enemy. Thank you, Kaol got out, then quickly turned away, walking toward the exit.
Sensel called after him, demanding his oath that he'd find the dog and punish it. But Kaol didn't bother to reply.
Which house did she belong to? Her parents hadn't just been murdered. They were part of the nobility who had been executed by the king. Slaughtered.
She'd been found in their bed, after they'd been killed. And then she must have run until she found the place where a Terrasen nobleman's daughter could hide. The Assassin's Keep.
She learned the only skills that could keep her safe. To escape death, she'd become death. Regardless of what territory her parents had lorded over, if Selena ever took up the mantle she'd lost, and if Terrasen ever got to its feet, then Selena could become a powerhouse, potentially capable of standing against Otterlin. And that made Selena more than just his enemy. It made her the greatest threat he'd ever encountered.
Chapter 39. Crouched in the shadow of a chimney atop a pretty little townhouse, Selena watched the home next door. For the last 30 minutes, people had been slipping inside, all cloaked and hooded, looking like nothing more than cold patrons eager to get out of the freezing night. She'd meant it when she told Archer she wanted nothing to do with him or his movement. And honestly, there was a part of her that wondered whether she should just kill them all and toss their heads at the king's feet. But Nehemia had been a part of this group. And even if Nehemia had pretended she didn't know anything about these people, they were still her people. She hadn't lied to Archer when she told him that she'd bought him a few extra days. After turning over Counselor Mullison, the king didn't hesitate to grant her a bit more time to kill the courtesan. A snow flurry gusted up, veiling her view of the front of Archer's townhouse. To anyone else, the gathering would seem like a dinner party for his clients. She knew only a few of the faces and bodies that hurried up the steps, people who hadn't fled the kingdom or been killed by her the night everything went to hell. There were many more, however, whose names she didn't know. She recognized the guard who had stood between her and Kaol at the warehouse, the man who had been so eager for a fight. Not by his face, which had been masked that night, but by the way he moved, and by the twin sword strapped to his back. He still wore a hood, but she could see shoulder-length dark hair gleaming beneath it, and what looked like the tan skin of a young man. He paused at the bottom step, turning to quietly utter commands to the two hooded men flanking him. With a nod, they vanished into the night. She contemplated trailing one of them, but she'd come here only to check on Archer, to see what he was up to. She planned to keep checking on him until the moment he got on that boat and sailed away. And once he was gone,
once she'd given the king his fake corpse. She didn't know what she'd do then. Selena slipped farther behind the brick chimney as one of the guards scanned the rooftops for any signs of trouble before continuing on his way, to watch one end of the street, if she guessed correctly. She stayed in the shadows for a few hours, moving to the rooftop across the street to better watch the front of the house until the guests started leaving, one by one, looking for all the world like drunken revelers. She counted them and marked what directions they went in and who walked with them, but the young man with the twin swords didn't emerge. She might have convinced herself that he was another client of Archer's, even his lover, had the stranger's two guards not returned and slipped inside. As the front door opened, she caught a glimpse of a tall, broad-shouldered young man arguing with Archer in the foyer. His back was to the door, but his hood was off, confirming that he did indeed have night-black shoulder-length hair and was armed to the teeth. She could see nothing else. His guards immediately flanked him, keeping her from getting a closer look before the door shut again. Not very careful, not very inconspicuous. A moment later, the young man stormed out, hooded once more, his two men at his side. Archer stood in the open doorway, his face visibly pale, arms crossed. The young man paused at the bottom of the steps, turning to give Archer a particularly vulgar gesture. Even from this distance, Selena could see the smile that Archer gave the man in return. There was nothing kind in it. She wished she'd been close enough to hear what they'd said, to understand what this was all about. Before, she would have trailed the young stranger to seek out the answers. But that was before. Now she didn't particularly care. It was hard to care, she realized as she started the trek back to the castle. Incredibly hard to care, when you didn't have anyone left to care about. Selena didn't know what she was doing at this door. Even though the guards at the foot of the tower had let her pass after checking her thoroughly for weapons, she didn't doubt for one moment that word would go right to Kaol. She wondered if he'd dare stop her, if he'd ever dare to utter another word to her. Last night, even from the distance at the moonlit graveyard, she'd seen the still healing cuts on his cheek. She didn't know whether they filled her with satisfaction or guilt. Every little bit of interaction was draining, somehow. How exhausted would she be after tonight? Selena sighed and knocked on the wooden door. She was 5 minutes late, minutes she'd spent debating whether she truly wanted to accept Dorian's offer to dine with him in his rooms. She'd almost eaten dinner in Rifthold instead. There was no answer to her knock at first, so she turned away, trying to avoid looking at the guards posted on the landing. It was stupid to come here anyway. She had just taken a step down the spiral staircase when the door opened. "You know, I think this is the first time you've been to my little tower," Dorian said. Foot still in the air, Selena collected herself before looking over her shoulder at the Crown Prince. "I was expecting more doom and gloom," she said, walking back to the door. "It's quite cozy." He held the door open and nodded to his guards.
"No need to worry," he told them, as Selena walked into the prince's chambers.
She'd expected grandeur and elegance, but Dorian's tower was, well, cozy was a good way to describe it. A bit shabby, too. There was a faded tapestry, a soot-stained fireplace, a moderate-sized four-poster bed, and a desk heaped with papers by the window. And books. Stacks and mountains and towers and columns of books. They covered every surface, every bit of space along the walls.
"I think you need your own personal librarian," she muttered, and Dorian laughed.
She hadn't realized how much she missed that sound. Not just his laugh, but her own, too. Any laugh, really. Even if it felt wrong to laugh these days, she missed it.
"If my servants had their way, these would all go to the library. They make dusting rather hard."
He stooped to pick up some clothes he'd left on the floor.
"From the mess, I'm surprised to hear you even have servants."
Another laugh as he carried the pile of clothes toward a door. It opened just wide enough to reveal a dressing room nearly as big as her own,
but she saw no more than that before he chucked the clothes inside and shut the door. Across the room, another door had led to a bathing chamber.
"I have a habit of telling them to go away," he said.
"Why?"
She walked to the worn red couch before the fireplace and pushed off the books that were piled there.
"Because I know where everything in this room is. All the books, the papers. And the moment they start cleaning, those things get hopelessly organized and tucked away, and I can never find them again."
He was straightening the red cloth of his bedspread, which looked rumpled enough to suggest he'd been sprawled across it until she'd knocked.
"Don't you have people who dress you? I would have thought that Roland would be your devoted servant, at least."
Dorian snorted, plumping his pillows.
"Roland's tried. Thankfully, he's been suffering from awful headaches lately and has backed off."
That was good to hear. Sort of. The last she'd bothered to check, the Lord of Mia had indeed become close to Dorian. A friend, even.
"And," Dorian went on, "aside from my refusal to find a bride, my mother's greatest annoyance is my refusal to be dressed by lords eager to win my favor."
That was unexpected. Dorian was always so well-dressed that she assumed he had people doing it for him. He went to the door to tell the guards to have their dinner brought up. "Wine?" he asked from the window, where a bottle and a few glasses were kept. She shook her head, wondering where they would even eat their food. The desk wasn't an option, and the table before the fireplace was a miniature library on its own. As if in answer, Dorian began clearing the table.
"Sorry," he said sheepishly. "I meant to clear a space to eat before you got here, but I got wrapped up in reading."
She nodded, and silence fell between them, interrupted only by the thud and hiss of him moving books.
"So," Dorian said quietly, "can I ask why you decided to join me for dinner? You've made it pretty clear that you didn't want to spend any time with me, and I thought you had work to do tonight."
Actually, she'd been downright awful to him, but he kept his back to her, as though the question didn't matter. And she didn't quite know why the words came out, but she spoke the truth anyway. "Because I have nowhere else to go."
Sitting in her rooms in silence made the pain worse. Going to the tomb only frustrated her, and the thought of Kaol still hurt so badly she couldn't breathe. Every morning she walked Fleetfoot by herself, then ran alone in the game park. Even the girls who had once lined the garden pathways waiting for Kaol had stopped showing up. Dorian nodded, looking at her with kindness she couldn't stand.
"Then you will always have a place here."
While their dinner was quiet, it wasn't lachrymose. But Dorian could still see the change in her, the hesitation and consideration behind her words, the moments when she thought he wasn't looking and an endless sorrow filled her eyes. She kept talking to him, though, and answered all his questions.
"Because I have nowhere else to go."
It wasn't an insult, not the way she'd said it. And now that she was dozing on his couch, the clock having recently chimed two, he wondered what was keeping her from going back to her own rooms. Clearly, she didn't want to be alone. And maybe she needed to be in a place that didn't remind her of Nehemia. Her body was a patchwork of scars. He'd seen it with his own eyes. But these new scars might go deeper. The pain of losing Nehemia, and the different but perhaps just as agonizing loss of Kaol. An awful part of him was glad she'd cut out Kaol. He hated himself for it.
"There has to be something more here," Selena said to Mort as she combed through the tomb the following afternoon.
Yesterday, she'd read the riddle until her eyes ached. Still, it offered no hint about what the objects might be, where precisely they were concealed, or why the riddle had been hidden so elaborately in the tomb.
Some sort of clue, something that connects the riddle to the rebel movement and Nehemia and Elena and all the rest.
She paused between the two sarcophagi. Sunlight spilled in, setting the dust motes shimmering.
"It's staring me in the face, and I know it."
"I'm afraid I can't be of service," Mort sniffed. "If you want an instant answer, you should find yourself a seer or an oracle."
Selena slowed her pacing.
"You think if I read this to someone with the gift of clairvoyance, they might be able to see some different meaning that I'm missing?"
"Perhaps.
though as far as I know, when magic vanished, those with the gift of sight lost it too.
Yes, but you're still here.
So?
Selena looked at the stone ceiling as if she could see through it, all the way to the ground above.
So perhaps other ancient beings might retain some of their gifts, too.
Whatever it is you're thinking, I guarantee it's a bad idea.
Selena gave him a grim smile. I'm pretty sure you're right.
Chapter 40 Selena stood before the caravans, watching as the tents were taken apart. Fortunate timing. She ran a hand through her unbound hair and straightened her brown tunic. Finery would have attracted too much attention, and even if it was just for an hour, she couldn't help but savor the feeling of anonymity, of blending in with the carnival workers, these people who had the dust of 100 kingdoms on their clothes. To have that sort of freedom, to see the world bit by bit, to travel each and every road. Her chest tightened. People streamed by, hardly glancing at her as she made her way to the black wagon. This could easily be folly, but what harm was there in asking? If Yellowlegs truly was a witch, then perhaps she had the gift of sight. Perhaps she could make sense of the riddle in the tomb. When Selena reached the wagon, it was mercifully devoid of patrons. Baba Yellowlegs sat on the top stair, smoking a long boned pipe whose bowl was shaped like a screaming mouth. Pleasant.
Come to look in the mirrors, she said, smoke spilling from her withered lips. Done running from fate at last?
I have some questions for you.
The witch sniffed her, and Selena fought the urge to step back.
You do indeed stink of questions. And the Staghorn Mountains. From Terrasen, are you? What's your name?
Selena stuck her hands deep in her pockets.
Lillian Gordana.
The witch spat on the ground.
What's your real name, Lillian?
Selena stiffened. Yellowlegs crowed with laughter.
Come, she cawed. Want to have your fortune told? I can tell you who you'll marry, how many children you'll have, when you'll die.
If you're indeed as good as you claim, you know I'm not interested in those things. I'd like to talk to you instead,
Selena said, flashing the 3 gold coins in her palm.
Cheap goat,
Yellowlegs said, taking another long drag from the pipe.
That's all my gifts are worth to you?
Perhaps this would be a waste of time, and money, and pride.
Selena turned away with a scowl, shoving her hands into the pockets of her dark cloak.
Wait,
Yellowlegs said.
Selena kept walking.
The prince gave me 4 coins.
She paused and looked over her shoulder at the crone. A cold, clawed hand gripped at her heart. Yellowlegs smiled at her.
He had such interesting questions, too. He thought I didn't recognize him, but I can smell Haveliard blood a mile off. 7 gold pieces and I'll answer your questions, and tell you his.
She'd sell Dorian's questions to her? To anyone?
That familiar calm went through her.
How do I know you're not lying?
Yellowleg's iron teeth glinted in the light of the torches.
It would be bad for business if I were branded a liar. Would it make you more comfortable if I swore on one of your soft-hearted gods? Or perhaps on one of mine?
Selena studied the black wagon, swiftly braiding her hair back. 1 door, no back exit, no sign of trick panels. No way out, and plenty of warning in case someone came in. She checked her weapons. 2 long daggers, a knife in her boot, and 3 of Philippa's deadly hairpins. More than enough. Make it 6 coins, Selena said softly, and I won't report you to the guard for trying to sell the prince's secrets.
Who says the guard won't be interested in them, too? You'd be surprised how many people want to know what truly interests the prince of the realm.
Selena slammed 6 gold coins onto the step beside the tiny crone.
3 pieces for my questions, she said, bringing her face as close to Yellowlegs's as she dared.
The reek from the woman's mouth was like carrion and stale smoke.
and 3 for your silence about the prince. Yellowlegs's eyes gleamed, her iron nails clinking together as she stretched out a hand to grab the coins.
Get in the caravan.
The door behind her swung open soundlessly. A dark interior lay beyond, speckled with patches of glimmering light. Yellowlegs snuffed out her bone pipe. She'd been hoping for this, to get inside the caravan, and thus avoid having anyone see her with Yellowlegs. The old woman groaned as she stood, a hand braced on her knee.
Care to tell me your name now?
A chill wind blew from within the caravan, sliding along Selena's neck. Carnival trick. I'll ask the questions, Selena said, and stalked up the steps into the caravan. Inside, there were a few measly candles, whose light flickered along row after row, stack after stack, of mirrors. They were every shape, every size, some leaning against the walls, some propped against each other like old friends, some little more than shards clinging to their frames. And everywhere else, wherever there was a bit of space, were papers and scrolls, jars full of herbs or liquids, brooms. Junk. In the gloom, the caravan stretched on much wider and longer than should have been possible. A winding path had been made between the mirrors, leading into the dark, a path that Yellowlegs was now treading, as if there were anywhere to go inside this strange place.
This can't be real. It must be an illusion of the mirrors.
Selena glanced back toward the wagon door in time to see it snick shut. Her dagger was out before the sound had finished echoing through the wagon. Ahead, Yellowlegs chuckled, lifting the candle in her hand. Its holder seemed to be shaped like a skull mounted on some sort of longer bone.
Tacky, cheap carnival tricks,
Selena told herself again and again, her breath clouding in the chill air inside the wagon. None of it was real, but Yellowlegs, and the knowledge she offered, truly was.
Come along, girl. Come sit with me, where we might talk.
Selena carefully stepped over a fallen mirror, keeping an eye on the bobbing skull lantern, and on the door. Any possible exits? None as far as she could see, but perhaps there was a trap door in the floor. And how the woman moved. Surprisingly fast, she realized, and hurried to catch up to Yellowlegs. As she strode through the forest of mirrors, her reflection shifted everywhere. In one, she appeared short and fat, in another, tall and impossibly thin. In another, she stood upside down, and in yet another, she walked sideways. It was enough to give her a headache.
Done gawking, Yellowlegs said.
Selena ignored her, but sheathed her dagger as she followed the woman into a small sitting area before a dim, grated oven. No reason to have her weapon out, not when she still needed Yellowlegs to cooperate. The sitting area lay in a rough circle of cleared junk and stacks of mirrors, with little more than a rug and a few chairs to make it hospitable. Yellowlegs hobbled over to the raised hearthstone, yanking a few logs from a tiny stack perched on the rim. Selena remained on the edge of the worn red rug, watching as Yellowlegs threw open the iron grate of the oven, tossed in the wood, and slammed the grate shut again. Within seconds, light flared, made brighter still by the surrounding mirrors.
The stones of this oven, Yellowlegs said, patting the curved wall of dark bricks like an old pet, came from the ruins of the Kraken capital city. The wood of this wagon was hewn from the walls of their sacred schools. That's why my wagon is unusual inside.
Selena said nothing. It would have been easy to dismiss it as a bit of carnival dramatics, except she was seeing it for herself.
So,
Yellowlegs said, remaining standing as well, despite the aged wooden furniture scattered around them.
Questions.
Even though the air in the wagon was chill, the burning oven somehow made it instantly warm, warm enough for Selena's layers of clothing to be uncomfortable. She'd been told a story once, on a hot summer night in the Red Desert, a story about what one of the long-lost Iron Teeth witches had done to a young girl. What had been left of her? Gleaming white bones, nothing more.
Selena glanced at the oven again and angled herself closer to the door. Across the small sitting area, more mirrors waited in the gloom, as if even the light of the fire couldn't reach them. Yellowlegs leaned closer to the grate, rubbing her gnarled fingers in front of it. The firelight danced along her iron nails.
Ask away, girl.
What had Dorian wanted to know so badly? Had he come inside this strange, smothering place? At least he'd survived. If only because Yellowlegs wanted to use whatever information she'd gleaned from him. Foolish, foolish man. Was she any different, though? This might be her only chance to learn what she needed to know, despite the risk, despite how messy and complicated the aftermath might be.
I found a riddle, and my friends and I have been debating its answer for weeks. We even have a bet going about it,
she said as vaguely as she could.
Answer it, if you're so clever and all-knowing. I'll toss in an extra gold coin if you get it right.
Impudent children! Wasting my time with this nonsense!
Yellowlegs watched the mirrors now, as if she could see something Selena couldn't. Or as if she's already bored. Some of the tightness in her chest loosening, Selena pulled the riddle from her pocket and read it aloud. When she was done, Yellowlegs slowly turned her head to Selena, her voice low and rough.
Where did you find that?
Selena shrugged.
Give me the answer and I might tell you. What sort of objects does this riddle describe?
Word keys.
Yellowlegs breathed, eyes glowing.
It describes the three word keys to open the word gate.
Cold slithered down Selena's spine, but she said, with more bravado than she felt,
Tell me what they are, the word keys, the word gate. For all I know, you might be lying about the answer. I'd rather not be made a fool of.
This information is not for the idle games of mortals,
Yellowlegs snapped.
Gold gleamed in Selena's palm.
Name your price.
The woman studied her from head to toe, sniffing once.
Nameless is my price,
Yellowlegs said.
But gold will do for now.
Selena set 5 extra gold coins down on the hearthstone, the heat from the flames singeing her face. Such a small fire, but she was already slick with sweat.
Once you know this, there is no unknowing it, the witch warned.
And from the gleam in Yellowlegs' eyes, Selena knew that the old woman hadn't bought her lie about the bet for one heartbeat. Selena took a step closer.
Tell me.
Yellowlegs looked toward another mirror.
The word governs and forms the foundation of this world. Not just Aurelia, but all life. There are worlds that exist beyond your knowledge. Worlds that lie on top of each other and don't know it. Right now, you could be standing on the bottom of someone else's ocean. The word keeps these realms apart.
Yellowlegs began to hobble around the sitting area, lost in her own words.
There are gates, black areas in the word that allow for life to pass between worlds. There are word gates that lead to Aurelia. All sorts of beings have come through them over the eons. Benign things, but also the dead and foul things that creep in when the gods are looking elsewhere.
Yellowlegs disappeared behind a mirror, her uneven steps echoing along.
But long ago, before humans overran this miserable world, a different sort of evil broke through the gates. The Vog. Demons from another realm, bent on the conquest of Aurelia, and with the force of an endless army behind them. In Wendlin, they fought against the Fae. Try as the immortal children might, they could not defeat them. Then the Fae learned that the Vog had done something unforgivable. They had taken a piece of a word gate with their dark magic and split it into 3 slivers. 3 keys. 1 key for each of their kings. Using all 3 at once, the Vog kings were able to open that word gate at will, to manipulate its power to strengthen their forces, to allow an endless line of soldiers to pour into the world. The Fae knew that they must stop it.
Selena stared at the fire, at the mirrors, at the darkness of the wagon around her. The heat was smothering now.
And so, A small band of Fae set out to steal them from the Volg Kings,
Yellowleg said, her voice coming nearer again.
It was an impossible task. Most of those fools didn't return. But the word keys were indeed retrieved, and the Fae Queen Maeve banished the Volg to their realm. Yet for all her wisdom, Maeve couldn't discover how to put the keys back in the gate, and no forge, no steel, no weight could destroy them. So Maeve, believing that no one should have their power, sent them across the sea with Brannan Galathinius, first king of Terrasen, to hide on this continent. And thus the word gate remained protected, its power unused.
Silence fell. Even Yellowlegs's hobbling steps had slowed.
So the riddle is a map to where the keys are hidden? Selena asked,
trembling now as she realized just what kind of power Nehemia and the others had been after. Worse, what the king might be after.
Yes.
Selena licked her lips. What might one do with the word keys?
The person who holds all three word keys would have control over the broken word gate. And all Irelia. They would be able to open and close the gate at will. They could conquer new worlds or let in all sorts of life to bend to their cause. But even one key could make someone immensely dangerous. Not enough power to open the gate, but enough to be a threat. You see, the keys themselves are pure power. Power to be shaped as the wielder wills it. Tempting, isn't it?
The words echoed through her, blending with Elena's command to find and destroy the source of evil.
Evil.
Evil that had arisen 10 years ago, when a whole continent had suddenly found itself at mercy of one man. A man who had somehow become unstoppable. A source of power that existed outside of magic.
It can't be.
Yellowlegs only let out a confirming chuckle. Selena kept shaking her head, her heart beating so violently she could hardly breathe.
The king has some of the word keys? That's how he was able to conquer the continent so easily?
But if he'd already done that, then what further plans did he have?
Perhaps, Yellowleg said. If I were to wager my hard-earned gold, I'd say he has at least one.
Selena scanned the dark, the mirrors, but saw only versions of herself looking back. She heard nothing but the crackling of the fire in the oven and her own uneven breathing. Yellowlegs had stopped moving.
Is there anything else?
Selena demanded. No response from the old woman.
So you're going to take my money and run?
Selena eased toward the winding path through the mirrors and the door that now seemed impossibly far away.
What if I still have questions?
Her own movements in the mirror sent her nerves jumping, but she kept alert and focused, reminding herself what she had to do. She drew both her daggers.
You think steel can hurt me?
Came a voice that slithered across each mirror until its origin was everywhere and nowhere. Here I was, thinking we were having a grand time, Selena said, taking another step.
Bah, who can have a grand time when your guest is planning to kill you?
Selena smiled.
Isn't that why you're moving toward the door?
Yellowlegs went on.
Not to escape, but to make sure I don't get past your clever, wicked daggers.
Tell me who else you've sold the prince's questions to, and I'll let you go.
Earlier, she'd been about to walk away, about to leave, when Yellowlegs's mention of Dorian had stopped her cold. Now she had no choice about what she had to do, what she would do to protect Dorian. It was what she'd realized last night. She did have someone left. One friend. And there was nothing she wouldn't do to keep him safe.
And if I say that I've told no one?
I wouldn't believe you.
Selena spied the door at last. No sign of the witch. She paused, roughly in the center of the wagon. It would be easier to catch the woman here, easier to make it quick and clean.
Pity,
Yellowleg said, and Selena angled herself toward the disembodied voice.
There had to be some hidden exit, but where?
If Yellowlegs got out, if she told anyone what Dorian had asked,
whatever it might be, if she told anyone what Selena had asked. All around Selena, her reflection shifted and glimmered. Quick. Clean. Then she'd be gone.
What happens, Yellowlegs hissed, when the hunter becomes the hunted?
From the corner of her eye, Selena glimpsed the hunched form, chains sagging beneath the gnarled hands. She whirled toward the crone, dagger already flying. To disable, to get her down so she could... The mirror shattered where Yellowlegs had been standing. Behind her, there was a heavy clink and a satisfied caw of laughter. For all her training, Selena wasn't fast enough to duck before the heavy chain whipped across the side of her head, and she slammed face first into the floor.